This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Move along home. Hello and welcome to episode 82 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave, and joining me this week, as every week, well, every week, fortnight, whatever, is someone who is actually the real brains behind this show. I just work here. It's my good friend Yannick. Hi Yannick, how are you?
Hi. Well, if I'm the brains of the show, we're in big trouble.
Well, I didn't want to say that, but
hello. Yeah.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Dave?
Yeah, I'm okay, I think. It's been busy at work and trying to get around the changeability of the weather here. We're kind of looking forward to summer, but not through a blanket of rain. So
yes, here same here. We're waiting for the summer, but the 2022 one.
Right. That's obviously where I'm going wrong. And also joining this week, we have a guest. And not just a guest, not
yes,
just any
do.
Guest. We have a first-time guest, which we all know what that
yes.
means.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea what that means.
Oh,
wait a minute.
You will. Don't worry.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, we're proud to be joined by John this evening. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Very
or
well.
Tonight, as maybe.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
This is where I'm actually going to have to defer to Yannick, because Yannick knows John a lot better than I do. So maybe, Yannick, if you can kind of do a bit of an introduction to who John is.
Well, the things that I know for sure is that John is Monica's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Monica, who was our guest, was that 3 weeks ago? Something like, I don't know, because we're publishing
four.
Those episodes in some kind of unordered schedule. So
right.
I don't know. But that was two episodes ago. And and I know John is a Star Trek fan, also a racer at Hot Shot Racing, because we've raced together.
Ah,
yeah, we have.
But that's pretty much everything.
But we did.
Well, you know, it doesn't matter racing well, not well. The important thing is to race.
We had fun.
As long as I win. As long as I win, I don't care.
Well, there you go.
Fair enough. So, John, do you want to introduce yourself then? Just tell us who you are and what you do and stuff.
Sure. So, my name's John Madden. I'm a junior software developer at a company called Tripwire. I am a longtime Star Trek fan, lifelong Star Trek fan, rather. And, a longtime geek.
Cool.
Every box ticked.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yes, exactly.
Every single one.
Exactly.
Yep.
Excellent.
Every single box.
It's great to have you here. You are very welcome. And, we hope you're welcome. Hope you feel welcome.
I certainly do. And I know my wife really had a great time on your guys' show. And when Yana came along with the offer, I was like, oh, yeah.
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 Okay, good.
Yeah, totally.
It's great.
Right.
All right.
So, on this week's show, we are going to be reviewing Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Season 1, Episode 10, Move Along Home. And we will be dusting off the 7 questions for our guest after we've done the review. So that a nice new set of answers for us will be nice. And then we'll just stick him in the pile, gathering dust like we have with all the others.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Along.
Move along.
Move along home. Yes, indeed. All right. So if we are ready, then we shall crack on with our review of Move Along Home. So in the teaser, it's an important day aboard Deep Space Nine, as an official delegation on behalf of the Wadi are due to arrive from the Gamma Quadrant for first contact. Commander Sisko is in his dress uniform, preparing to welcome the ship, although he gets worried when he learns that Jake has been learning about Bajoran girls from none other than his new friend, Nog. Sisko decides they need to set aside some time the next day so that they can work damage control. Yeah, no young boy wants that talk, do they?
No, especially not with nautical terminology. It's no. Like, what can make this more awkward? Starboard and port sun. Yeah.
Yeah. The senior staff assemble in the airlock to greet the Wadi representative, Fallow. Although Sisko is keen to make a good impression, he's put out to find that Fallow and the other Wadi just want to head straight to Quark's in order to play games.
Yeah, I can't blame them, you know, protocol and stuff. That's boring.
So I knew this was going to be an episode where Fallow stepped off the transport looking like every game shop owner I've ever played D&D at. You know, and he's just like, okay, where's the dice? I'm gone. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we've got a game shop in our town, and totally, totally.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm joking aside, he's a dead ringer for this guy who owns a shop. His brother looked just like Fallow. It was wild.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but yeah.
It's go ahead.
No.
I was going to say, it always amazes me that every civilization we encounter are, you know, 99% looking like humans with some tattoos or things like that. Mm-hmm. But then I remember this is the 90s, 90 something. And so they were not, maybe they were not as advanced in CGs and makeups and stuff like that we are now. Because if you look at, well, that's not really true, actually. I was going to say, if you look at the aliens now in the modern Star Trek series, but no, in fact, they are mostly humans too, human looking. So for once, Dave, you can ignore me.
You know, I think it really comes down to a very practical reason for that, you know, budget.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I think my wife in chat mentioned, you know, Farscape. They had like, what, 8 episodes tops? They had a little more to play with. You know, we get like Play-Doh on foreheads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Farscape, they had puppets. That's true. at least, like, what, two of them? At least. Mm-hmm. But hey, so yeah, we saw humans with blue tattoos. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
I watched that yesterday. I already forgot.
No, blue tattoos. Yeah. Blue tattoos, and yeah. Not even a lot either. There's one like right here. It's like half the commitment of a Trill.
Oh, dear. Okay, let's crack on with Act 1 then. In Quark's bar, the Wadi delegates are eager to play a new game. However, Quark has to make sure they have something to gamble with for Darbo. Fallow offers Clon Pegs, or Alpha Current Nectar, as items of value, but Quark refuses them both. Then, he's offered a bag of gems, which he accepts greedily.
You put gems in front of Quark, and he will accept that.
Yeah, you know, Quark is said to have lobes or whatever the Ferengi call them, but you know, some native from the place he's trying to open up negotiations with offers them what he calls what they call items of value, and no, Quark just goes for the bag of alien, you know, their alien favorite kidney stones or whatever, and he's just into it, so into it. It's like, here's take a right turn to the shiny.
It's yeah, that's it. It's shiny, yeah. So it must be valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I found it interesting that Quark just disregarded the other two items immediately. Yes, they looked pretty tacky from where we were sitting, and obviously we find out later on what Clon Pegs actually are. And yeah, I wouldn't have taken them either. But the suggestion that this Alpha Current Nectar is one of the most valuable substances on wherever it is they came from, and they just stuck a load of it in a glass and said to Quark, here, drink this. So it's obviously not that valuable.
Right. Well,
or maybe it's valuable and they do have a lot of that. Makes them less valuable.
Yeah, maybe exactly.
Betting with casks and just, here, kid, have one for free. Or however the 80s told me drug dealers did it.
Yeah. The first one is free.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, it's very, very interesting with Quark and the what we see really motivates him.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be honest, he's got to get things that he will be able to trade for something else. So something that he knows or he thinks will have value here on Deep Space Nine or around.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, because I think Quark really got interested in the Delta Quadrant later on, or the Gamma Quadrant, rather. Mm-hmm. Later on, yeah. Mm. Makes sense.
It was interesting to see Quark being presented with somebody who was his equal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A challenge for him, because you could see straight away that there was going to be a really interesting dynamic between the two of them. And you could, there's no way, at this stage in the episode, there's no way of calling which one's going to come out over the other one, because they both seemed as conniving as each other.
Equally degenerate.
And that.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
After about 6 hours, the delegates are winning almost every spin, and both Quark and Commando Sisko are getting tired, in Quark's case because he's tired of them always winning. Sisko decides enough is enough and leaves the bar to go to bed. But before leaving, Sisko asks Quark to inform him when they stop playing Darbo. Quark heads over to the table and pleads that the Darbo girl's hands are tired from all of those spins. Fallow orders Quark to replace her. He gets Broik to replace her and instructs him covertly to begin fixing the table so that the Wadi do not win. Yeah, not obvious.
Not obvious at all.
No. But how much of that is, you know, for us, the viewers' benefit, you know, just to make sure that everybody understands what he does. So it's not necessarily in-world.
No, but there are ways where you can do something so that it doesn't look completely obvious to the people around them, but would still be obvious to us. But I don't know, just the way that Broik kind of hit, you know, surreptitiously stuck his hand under the table to press a button whilst looking a bit shifty as he was doing it. Yeah. I'm not surprised he got called out.
I think the way they portrayed Broik, he kind of walked up to the table looking shifty, so it was all kind of downhill from there. And we have to match this with maybe early 90s sensibilities. It's like Star Trek, the 24th century or whatever. Maybe let's not teach people how to rig a roulette game and by showing maybe them how it's done. Let's just put our hand over here on the side of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe telegraph it a little bit, you know, for the younger viewers. Yeah.
But that's my favourite hand resting place. It always goes there. It's how I feel the most comfortable. Click.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah. So I have an issue with my shoulder that makes this really, you know, really comfortable.
Fallow loses the next turn and becomes suspicious. He soon discovers Quark's deception and corners him at the bar. Quark tries to pass it off like he didn't know, but Fallow is not fooled. He decides to start a new game and transforms the Darbo table into a different board game, which he announces is called Chula. He explains that the game involves 4 players and that their objective is to move along home. Quark decides to play the game in the hope that the Wadi will be lenient with his cheating. He's like a kid in a toy store, isn't he?
Yeah. And it was not very convincing when he tried to pass the fault on Broik. I mean, what? Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I am fed up with your cheating. Yes.
It's like catching the kid with his hand in the cookie jar.
Yep.
And the kid, pointing the cookie jar at you, say, "I don't know what you're talking about." Really telegraphed.
That's it.
In Sisko's quarters, he finds Jake still awake late into the evening. Jake admits to his father that he has been spending time with Nog, but on a school project, nothing more. Yeah, so methinks he protests too much. We've only been doing this, nothing else.
Yeah. And Cisco, as I recall, is like, I was born at night, but not last night, kid.
Cisco tells him to go to bed, saying there is no excuse, and promises to have a chat with him about Nog and girls in the morning. However, as he is sleeping, he is restless and wakes up to find himself lying on the floor of a large, odd room.
Yeah, that was strange. And that's when you say, what is going on?
Mm. Yeah, how did that conversation go last night? Man.
Yeah. Okay, before we move on to Act 2, let's say hello to the people in our chats, plural. As we are recording this episode, we are streaming that live on Twitch and YouTube. So who do we have in our chat? We have Lainey, we have Monica, we have Chris, I think, in the YouTube chat. We have Eric, who just joined the Twitch chat. Did I forget someone? I don't think so. But if I did forget someone, please manifest yourself so that we can say hello.
Yep, drop your name.
John and Dave, of course, and myself are in the chat, but, you know.
Yeah, but we're here.
Of course we are.
We are here.
But thank you, everyone, for joining us. If you guys want to join us, we will tell you all about that at the end of this episode. Be aware, though, that... it takes about 2.5 to 3 times the length of the podcast to record. But it's a lot of fun.
All right, we're on to Act 2. Cisco tries to call Ops and attempts to end the program, if he is in a holosuite, but no luck. He has his Starfleet tricorder with him, so he searches around, trying all the doors until he finds an unlocked one. He wanders into a hall, opening another door. Behind it, he encounters an image of Fallow, who, laughing mockingly, instructs him to move along home.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to strike Cisco too much that he's waking up in the middle of the night with a tricorder in some strange place.
So if our phones are the modern day analog of a tricorder, maybe he was just scrolling Reddit.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It does.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
But I suppose from the perspective of somebody waking up, if they were in a dream, then the absurdity of their current environment would pass them by, because that's how dreams work.
Mm-hmm. Granted.
Because I thought, I didn't think he woke up. I thought he'd woken up inside his dream. Until, obviously, we find out that's not the case later on. But it seemed reasonable to me that he would think it normal.
Okay.
Including having...
I understand that.
Having a tricorder and whatever else he had on him at the time.
That makes sense. Yeah, no, that's actually a very good take on it. I didn't think about that while I was watching the show. When I was watching the episode, I did kind of get the impression that he, or at least we as the viewers, knew he woke up in the game somehow, and having the equipment was okay. So they didn't really get into the nitty gritty of explaining how, you know, Cisco whipped out a tricorder and went to work, and you know, they just got on with the episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, that definitely makes sense.
Hmm.
I agree with you guys, both of you,
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
All at the same time? Dang.
Yeah,
Dave,
both of you
good.
At the same time. Yeah, you're good,
buddy.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen often.
Yeah. Hey, good thing we're recording. We are recording, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I keep my... Well, Yannick will send me his recording as a backup, and I'll make sure I keep a backup of it so that I just capture that one bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Hearing faint cries for help, he finds Dr. Bashir, who believes that this is a dream and is trying to wake himself up. Major Kira and Lieutenant Dax show up moments later, also drawn by Bashir's screams. Cisco tells them of his encounter with Fallow, which Bashir believes is a behavioural test, which deeply upsets Kira. They decide to split up and use their comm badges, which are still working, to keep in touch.
Yeah, good example of stellar acting from Alexander Siddig.
So that moment with Bashir is the polar opposite, I feel, of the moment with Quark later on. And I'll touch on that when we come around to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because as, let's just call it rough, Alex Siddig was with that particular portion of the screaming. Quark was, Armin Shimmerman was amazing later on with the groveling or the screaming rather.
Yeah. Yes. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a bit wild in the contrast of that.
Yeah. Well, let's just say it's only episode 5, 4, 5, something like that. 5, 6, maybe. I don't remember exactly which one it is on first season. So, yeah. Fortunately, we know because we've seen the 7 seasons that it's getting better.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that first season was not his best.
Although I have to say that it's kind of endemic to Star Trek in general. That I think that, you know, the first season, the first bit of starting out rough is kind of a trademark of Star Trek. You know, we had one or two rough seasons of TNG before it got really good. It got good.
Jonathan Frakes was not that good at the beginning of TNG.
No. So I honestly credit a lot of the success of TNG in later seasons to the beard. You know, without the beard, I don't think TNG would have been what it was. Yeah.
Which is why I now have a beard. On this podcast, and since Dave and I got the beard, I mean, it's like millions of downloads every week.
How about we move on?
Okay.
Yes. Move along.
Move along.
Move along home. Right.
Oh gosh, I knew that it was going to be a theme this episode.
It's just so reusable.
It is.
Yeah.
Keeps the podcast flowing.
Early next morning, Jake Sisko informs Odo that his father is missing. Odo discovers that Sisko and 3 other senior staff members are not on board the station and launches an investigation. After scolding Lieutenant Primin, who has assumed they were affected by the Lon party last night, Odo orders a full security sweep of the station and the docked ships. And I'm like, yeah, Odo is back, baby. That was brilliant. I thought the way he responded to that was spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Took Primin down a peg.
But don't call him Constable.
Do not call him Constable. Nope. He is Chief of Security.
It. Right.
Who sleeps in a bucket.
And that Starfleet Lieutenant, it just screamed. It was so well acted, I think, and just was so few lines. You just got such a an encompassing feeling that he is like a terminal lieutenant. He is always going to be a lieutenant. He's never making commander. He knows it, and he's just coasting. He's doing the 24th century Federation no economy bull of analog of punching that clock. He is punching that clock and running like hell.
Yep.
Yeah.
9 to 5, and that's
it. Yep. Yeah. Oh, station commander's gone. Hope he brings me back something. That's it. Hope he brings back something for everyone. But yeah, that was my takeaway from that scene.
Station commander got abducted by a mad, crazy game person, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Yeah. Given the episodic nature of Star Trek in general, you kind of think, okay, so he got abducted by an alien species. Must be Wednesday? Or is that more of a Tuesday thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Fallow keeps Quark in the game, forcing him to learn the rules as he plays. Quark nervously asks for a minimum wager and rolls. Fallow goes to work executing the next turn. And at least we now know what clon pegs are.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So let's see. He was really pushing his luck trying to offer that as a thing of worth when all they are just stitching it together. Matchsticks.
I'm trying to join you with this, but all I got are wire crimpers and a pair of scissors.
It sounded
very good, very close.
Yeah.
And the one thing I liked about this scene is just for a moment you really felt for Quark because he was the younger brother everywhere, who like sat down with an older brother at a board game, and you know that older brother didn't tell you squat.
Yeah.
It's like you're learning as you're going, kid. Here, roll this. Yeah. Like, okay.
Okay.
Yes. Meanwhile, the four players reach a door, which opens to reveal a girl playing a hopscotch-like game and singing a rhyme.
Ella Moraine, count to four. Ella Moraine, then three more. Ella Moraine, if you can see. Ella Moraine, you'll come with me.
How was that?
Well, nice. I think you could have leaned into it a little more. You were, like, off several keys, but I dug your passion. I felt
Yeah.
That was a stunning rendition, Dave. I am so proud of you for how you leaned into that.
Yeah.
Me too. You're the man. Nice.
No,
I'm glad you reviewed this one.
Not sarcasm at all. I couldn't have had that commitment.
I was expecting more flack for the use of the accent, to be fair.
No, I thought it was a wonderful touch.
Oh. Well, okay. Well, I'll take that. Yeah.
Because next week it's just you and me. You won't get any of that.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, dearie me.
That was awesome. Thank you for not making me do that, though. That's what I'm saying.
Would you have done?
Oh, wait. The show's not done with it.
No, gosh. No, I would have actually said it in the most monotone voice possible. It would have made the... it would have made a drunken reading of The Great Gatsby sound like epic.
That's a podcast I would listen to. Anyway. The players move into the room and are sealed in. Moving across the room, Kira stumbles into a force field. The girl, however, moves through it. Bashir deduces that the pattern of the girl's movements allows her to pass through, but is also knocked backwards. Jadzia follows the girl precisely, both singing the rhyme, which I'm not going to sing again, and mimicking the hand actions, and successfully passes the force field. The others follow. The girl proclaims, Ella Moraine, third chap. It's like third level.
Yeah.
They're good chaps.
Now, that particular part stuck out to me because if you watch the four characters sing the song as they're going through these movements, you see right at the end there, Kira has absolutely had enough of that crap, and she's only been into it for like 5 seconds. That was amazing. That was a wonderful character moment for each of them. Like,
yeah, but I've read somewhere on the internet that they actually spent a lot of time filming this scene because they couldn't get it right, and Avery Brooks said that this scene and maybe the episode in general, but this scene in particular, was one of the most despised scenes he ever had to do because they had to sing that over and over and over again. And
if it's still stuck in our ears, in our head 20 some odd years later, I could only imagine.
Yeah,
and Alexander Sedik, it was his he was in his space. I've said before he would be brilliant in the theater, and I think. Yeah, musical theatre, singing and dancing and just prancing around being an absolute idiot. He was in his element.
Yeah.
And I mean that as a compliment. I don't normally say good things about Alexander Sedik, but on this occasion, he was doing the right thing.
Yeah. But it was a wonderful character moment.
Yeah. I would love to have been on the fly on the wall when they were doing that, those scenes.
Yes.
Back on the station, the Wadi cheer, Ella Moraine, as Fallow moves the four pieces down one level on the board and hands Quark several jewels. He happily accepts them and believes that he is learning the game.
Yeah, right.
No.
Nope.
You know nothing.
Nope.
Okay, so we're now on to Act 3. Fallow asks Quark to choose a path for the players, either the difficult short route, with a chance of winning more prizes, or the long, easy route. He says to choose carefully. Double the peril, double your winnings, teases Fallow. Quark excitedly tries to negotiate a licensing agreement to keep the game in his bar, when Odo barges in, demanding to know if Quark has seen them. He brushes him off until Odo exclaims that four officers are missing. Slowly, Quark makes the connection. Four players, four missing officers. He looks nervously at the player pieces and then at Odo, who then silently understands Quark's realization. Fallow then insists that he choose, so he chooses the safer path and, with Odo watching, rolls the dice.
Dun, dun, dun.
It was good watching the cogs turn in his head as he kind of worked out. What I wanted to know was, the four pieces, who was who?
We don't know.
No.
Well, I couldn't
work it out.
No, and actually it became a plot point a few minutes later, how, mm-hmm. you know, he couldn't decide which one. Well, we're getting a little ahead of it, but it comes.
No, it
comes into play. Yeah. Here I am spoiling a 20-some-odd-year-old show again.
Yeah.
I'm good at that.
How dare you?
How am I even allowed on the internet?
Oh, boy. Moving through the corridors of the maze, the players find a room with Wadi in it, all drinking and laughing. They don't very well respond to the officers. Frustrated, Kira starts shouting and throwing a tray of food to the floor. Right old hissy fit. Suddenly, the doors close and a toxic gas fills the room, causing the players to start coughing. Furthermore, Fallow comes into the room, telling them to move home again, but otherwise not responding. Bashir notices that the Wadi remain unaffected, so decides to try some of the drink that is being offered around. The drink relieves the effects of the gas. Sisko and the others also drink and are also relieved. The Wadi all cheer. The image of Fallow states that the players have progressed to Shap 4. Back at the table, the Wadi cheer, Alamarain! And Fallow moves the player pieces ahead, and Quark is happy to win more. Odo, however, is concerned and leaves.
Yeah.
Why would a medical doctor blindly and without consideration drink a drink that is not designed for his species, necessarily, not been proven, without thinking?
Well, you know, dead for dead.
Yeah, okay.
Necessity, invention.
I get the desperate means, desperate measures thing, but it's a case of, oh, that must be it.
Yeah.
That's like me in the pub.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so I think at this point in Bashir's career, he's at that point where it's kind of a drink anything on the table.
Well, after having done the Alamarain scene, how many times he did it, I'll probably do the same.
Yeah. It's like, I never want anybody to mention this ever again. Take one to the head. It's like I'm out.
Monica says he's really smart, or he's trying to seem super dumb.
He's doing a good job of it.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't think they came up with the plot line. Well, I was going to spoil something again. The super smart Bashir, let's just say, I don't think they had really come up with that part of the plot line quite yet at DS9.
No.
Based on the particular writing that Alexander Siddig was given.
Yeah. I think not before end of season 2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Before that is... Yeah. But I don't know how much of that is the actor and how much of that is the role that has been written for him.
Yeah,
probably a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I recall from interviews that Alexander Siddig, he was very earnest. He seemed to be a very earnest person. Every interview I ever saw, he really did seem to be trying to do a very good job with Bashir, and you could kind of see that there was a bit of interesting writing for all the characters at some period of time, at some point or another. All of the characters had a bit of a like one of the first episodes that there's a little bit of acting between Sisko and Jake, where Sisko is telling him to smile, and then He yaks out a smile, and it all seemed very awkward. So I think they all had their chance for that particular bit of awkwardness, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so that takes us on to Act 4. After some strange readings are detected on the Wadi ship, Odo decides to ignore Primin's Starfleet objections and go and visit the Wadi ship. Odo retorts that he's not in Starfleet, and he orders him to beam him over. Kind of like this Odo, a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like, kick-ass Odo. You know, when Primin hesitated, he said, "Is it against Starfleet regulations to press a few buttons?"
Which, depending on how you interpret it, could be.
Yeah.
If those buttons say self-destruct, then possibly.
Possibly. True.
Odo finds a room with an unusual energy signature. Stepping through the doors, he surprisingly ends up in Quark's bar to find Quark playing the game. Fallow notices him and reminds Quark to continue playing, choosing the next path. Again, he chooses the safer path, but Fallow says, "It's an unfortunate role." Uh-oh.
I did like that look Fallow gave Odo when he reappeared back in Quark's. It's like he knew.
Absolutely. Knew
what's up. Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah, he knew.
Yeah. And he looked at Odo like, "Please." Dude.
Did you enjoy your trip?
Hey. It's like you scattered your molecules for that.
Yeah. In the game, they continue to move through the corridors when their tricorders detect an energy build-up. A bright light source appears and moves towards them. At the table, Fallow selects a player piece. The light source scans them all and then focuses on Bashir, who vanishes.
Another great acting moment. I'm picking on Alexander Zelig. It's not his fault, probably, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately.
They say filmmaking is a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. My acting was fine. It was the writer.
Right.
Yes.
It's like, I did 40 times. You couldn't find one that was better than that one? Like, it's like, we know we didn't all do this once.
It's not exactly something you can get wrong, is it?
No.
Having said that, have you heard the story about the Wilhelm scream?
No. What's up with that?
Ah, right. I'll have to send you a link to an episode of 20,000 Hertz that went through and it described what the scream was. And it's one of those things that once you've heard it once, you will hear it everywhere. It's like, what's the other thing? Oh, the Amen break. So a particular drum sample from a song. I can't remember who did the song now. But it's a 1970s song. It was a drum riff about 10 seconds long. That was then taken and sampled and used on pretty much every hip-hop song from the 1990s onwards, which they never, ever gave royalties for. So it was just used. So it's the same thing. Once you've heard it once, you'll hear it again. But the Wilhelm scream is typically something you would hear in cartoons as a comical scream. But it shows you, in this episode of 20,000 Hertz, it actually showed you how that scream came about, who originally recorded it, why it was recorded, how many times they had to get to go through it to get that exact scream. And I guarantee you, once you've heard it once, you'll hear it in TV shows forever.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I know about the Wilhelm scream. When I hear it in the movies and I hear it everywhere, especially in Star Wars, they love that in Star Wars. Anybody who got threw off anything, what? But... I never knew the story about that, and that does seem like something that it pops up in movies all the time, so there has to be a cool story behind that. Send me that link, please.
I shall do. We'll stick it in the show notes as well.
Right on.
Great podcast, by the way, 20,000 Hertz. Recommend it.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah.
Fallow knocks over the piece representing Bashir, suggesting the player is out. Odo immediately orders them to give the officers back, but Fallow ignores it, insisting that they keep playing. However, he says Odo can have them back when Quark is done, albeit rather cryptically. Fallow then tells Quark to choose which route to take, and he considers the risky path. Odo cautions Quark, but Quark realises that the players were only one level away from home, and the short route would take them there in only one move. Quark reassures Odo that he has spent his life assessing chance in games of all kinds, and that he has a good understanding of this one. With Odo's agreement, Quark decides to take the short route, but rolls a Thialo. He must sacrifice one so that two may live. That's a bit cheeky, isn't it?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Monica has this right. It's a critical miss. It's a Thialo.
Fumble.
It's totally waddy for net one.
The fumble.
Nut one.
It's a 0-1 on a D100.
Right. It's like, D100s, they're not supposed to have zero, but damn it, you found it. Good job.
I am lost. Oh, there we are. So we're now on to Act 5, the final act of the episode. Odo is dismayed, and so is Quark, who is unable to decide which player to sacrifice. Quark says he cannot be forced to choose, but Fallow says all three will be lost if he doesn't. He grovels dramatically and pleads to be allowed not to decide, and Fallow accepts. He then programs the computer to randomly select a player to be sacrificed.
That's much better.
That was some championship groveling, by the way. That was amazing. I love that part so much. Quark went in on that grovel like I do when I'm trying to get my wife to make migas on Sunday. Like, please, please, please. It was amazing. And then Fallow was like, yeah, sure. I got the random number generator.
Yeah.
Yeah. No worries. You don't want to choose? I got you, fam. Or whatever they say on Twitch.
In the game, they hear Bashir calling out. A door opens and Dax heads into it. The others follow. They then find themselves in a rocky cavern. In the distance, they can still hear Bashir's voice calling to them, which entices them forward. Dax stumbles on some loose rocks and a large boulder lands on her leg. Fortunately, the leg is not broken and they continue onwards. They see Bashir's figure, but instead of coming to help Dax, Fallow's figure again appears and tells them they are on Shap 6. Dax eventually entreats Kira and Sisko to leave her and reach safety, but they refuse and insist on attempting to help her. Moving around a narrow outcropping on a steep cliff, they all fall off, appearing suddenly back again in the bar, together with Bashir. Now, is it just me that thought that scene just went on for so long? Unnecessarily. They just padded it out.
Yeah, they were wringing it for every bit of drama they could, yes.
And I think when they edited that, they realized that they needed like 3 more minutes. So they padded the last scene.
Oh, I don't know, 3 more minutes of Alan Moraine would have been more fun.
Oof.
Exactly.
Oof.
Right.
I don't know, I think...
They recorded enough of it.
They wouldn't have let the Paramount lot stand after that. It would have been overrun. It's like, why have you done this to us?
Yes.
Although honestly, it was a very ringing out the drama for them to reappear back in Quarks and. It's a little bit of foreshadowing here. One of the best troll moments in all of Star Trek history. Perpetrated by Fallow momentarily.
Right, I believe this is the last scene.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is the last paragraph, anyway.
It is the last paragraph, yes. Let's see if I can get through it. That'd be fun.
Let's do it. We believe in you, Dave.
The Wadi finish their game and change the table back to a Darbo table and are about to leave when Commander Sisko demands to know what was going on. At that point, Fallow's normally stern demeanour changes. He states, with comical intonation, "It's only a game!" There was never any actual risk and that Quark had cheated them in Darbo. Having just feared for their lives, Commander Sisko is miffed at the Wadi. They've committed a faux pas on the group by offering them a game that deceived them into thinking that they were playing for their lives, which, understandably, would annoy the players, especially after finding out their lives were not in danger after all. After the Whitey leave, Quark chases after Fallow, sensing an opportunity to market Chula.
Yeah, always looking after a good business opportunity. Mm. Our beloved Quark.
And I really wish the Whitey would have made more appearances in DS9. You know, that was kind of a trollish or whimsical villainy, kind of in the vein of Q, but all without omnipotent power, which was amazing.
Well, it was all illusion. Yeah, it was not
good tech
power, but yeah, good technique. Yeah,
So that was their only appearance.
Hmm. This was a good episode. I'm glad I was able to come on here with you and review it.
Well, I was about to ask you what you thought of the episode as a whole, but you've kind of told us already.
Well, you know, that particular question is the natural continuation of our conversation thus far. So, yeah. Sorry if I stole your thunder, Dave.
No, not at all. It's less words for me to say. All right. So, Yannick, what did you think of the episode then?
It's not one of my favorite episodes, to be fair. Every time I watch it, I watched it the first time and then I tend to only watch it when I need to. Partly because of the Ella Marine song, because that stuck in your head. And as I said, I didn't think it was a great plot, a great story. I didn't think the acting was very good. And I mean, it's not Threshold, but it's not that far for me. It really not one of my preferred episodes. I tend to ignore it. Or sing the song when I want to annoy someone.
Is that the geek equivalent of "I know a song that'll get on your nerves, get on your nerves, get on your nerves"?
Yeah,
it's like the song that never ends.
Yes.
And what did you think, Dave, about this episode?
I was kind of spoiled by the fact that you said I would either love it or hate it, and it was all right. I didn't have any issues with it necessarily. Apart from the rockfall scene, which I thought they just over-egged that. It was unnecessary. But I think the fact that it involved a game that was utterly, utterly pointless, it appealed to me. I liked that approach. It's not a new thing. It certainly wasn't a new thing when this episode was produced. The idea of setting someone a puzzle that promises some kind of tragic and bad ending, and then it turns out, oh, by the way, it was all a game, it was all a joke. So, let's say nothing new there. But I think overall, it seemed more to me to be a filler episode. The fact that we never see the Wadi again is disappointing because we've been introduced to a new species. The fact that we were robbed of a decent first contact was disappointing. But other than that, it was a reasonable filler episode. Can't really complain about it.
Yeah, okay.
Simple.
Yeah, I just it's not that bad. It's just
not that great.
Don't have any affinity for it.
So it was good in the context of the first season.
Right.
Yeah, probably at the time, yes.
Because, I mean, picking up on what you said earlier, actually, John, about the first season curse, we certainly picked up on that in the first season of The Next Generation. But from my perspective, I'm in a slightly unique situation that almost everybody who has helped us with reviewing the episodes on this show have watched the episode, apart from the new ones, obviously, have watched the episodes previously. Whereas for Enterprise, TNG, and DS9, I am watching them for the first time, with the odd exception. I watched Encounter of Farpoint before reviewing it. So, yeah, spoilers for me, they are spoilers because I haven't seen them before, but it doesn't worry me at all because I tend
I'm
to look.
I'm so sorry.
I'm the person that reads ahead on synopses when I'm watching series of TV shows, so it's really not an issue. But for me, it's a huge excitement having watching these for the first time. But what it also does is it makes me realize how dated some of these TV shows can be. And I've mentioned it before, the video and audio quality of Deep Space Nine is beyond abysmal. It is absolutely really, really, really awful. But I'm used
video,
to it,
as we said many times.
Yeah, totally. But I'm kind of used to it now. It doesn't bother me as much as it used to. That's why I've stopped mentioning it, apart from just now.
Yeah, I spoke to it a little earlier about, you know, when you're watching some of these episodes and Star Trek in general, Star Trek really dealt with a lot of modern issues. And it's dealt with modern, or rather contemporary issues, in the vein of a ship traveling across space or a space station at the edge of a wormhole. And when I'm going back to watch these, what I really wrestle with sometimes is that the world that these originally premiered in is not the world I live in now. And, you know, it's almost very easy to send yourself into a spin by comparing it to now versus then to what you were seeing on the screen and trying to, what was I like? For example, I was asking myself, what was I doing back then when this first aired? You know, what was the world like at that time? What is this speaking to? And then, you know, for the purposes of humor, you apply it to your Twitch streamers and your Twitch gamers, and you know, you go on from there. But it's interesting. It's interesting to think of it like that. I envy you, Dave, for being able to watch this for the first time today.
I have to say, it is very much an experience because it's difficult when you have people that are on these reviews that know what they're talking about, because more often than not, they're referring to other parts of the universe that I have no knowledge of, like when we were in reviewing an episode of TNG with Ro, and all of a sudden the conversation went on to the Cardassians, and I'm like, I have absolutely no idea who you're talking about. And now we're in 10 episodes in on DS9, I now know who the Cardassians are.
No, I really wish I was there for that. I could have explained to you exactly how the Kardashians played a part in Star Trek.
Mm, oh, totally, totally. I've
just
got
to sow some chaos. Now. Just some chaos.
I want to pick up on something you said a moment ago, John, about the way that Star Trek picks up and deals with social issues. And again, this is something we picked up on before. We've had a couple of episodes now. One of them dealt explicitly with racism and xenophobia. That was an episode of TNG. And I think there's another episode of TNG season one that also dealt with drug abuse. And I think that episode was timed either in production or in release to coincide with Nancy Reagan's Don't Do Drugs campaign in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. But it occurs to me that despite the fact that Star Trek has made really good and, I mean, applaudable efforts to address a lot of these social issues that were starting to come into play, starting to come into real awareness at the time these episodes came out, what we're seeing now is the situation is significantly, exponentially worse than it was when these social issues were addressed within Star Trek. I just find that really intriguing.
It is. And, you know, I really have to wonder if we would be in this situation if more people watched Star Trek. You know.
Okay, yeah. No, that's fair. But I don't know. Yeah. The social issues that were being addressed may not have been... I mean, there are other TV series that were addressing some of those social issues at the same time, but maybe the general public just simply missed the point.
That was very easily the. It's very possible that they did miss the point, and so the early 90s, the mid 90s, you kind of, I saw a kind of trend. I was even very young when this was happening. I was in maybe my early teens. The fact that people were starting to take things at face value. They're kind of, starting to miss the nuance in favor of just simple entertainment.
Right.
So with Star Trek, you got a lot of, hey, there's really cool ships and a lot of cool action scenes and laser guns. Gotta love those laser guns. Oh, even the ship has laser guns. Awesome. I'm all in. And meanwhile, the cast of characters are dealing with these social issues in the context of an alien planet. So it's very easy to kind of lose yourself in the, hey, this is happening somewhere on an alien planet. I don't have to stress myself about getting too deep into this. And, you know, and and it was a thing. And yes, and it was, I don't know if the, that's a good question. I don't know if the point was missed. Because I think that the true fans of Star Trek, the ones who knew the goals of Gene Roddenberry when he was creating these shows, that I think they got the point. And I'd like to think that there have been efforts to achieve that. You know, I do know for a fact that a lot of the common technologies we have today started with Star Trek. You know, our flip phones, the ones we had in the early 2000s, those were nothing but communicators from the original series. They did the exact same thing. And if you look at a pad, a personal access display device, how far off is that from our tablet? Actually,
not far at all.
I think our tablets actually even do a few cooler things. I have never once seen anybody on Star Trek play Angry Birds. And if they could, they would have. if they could have, they would have, let me tell you. I think Star Trek did change the world. It did change the world. But I think it did it in a way that wasn't necessarily political or social, like the hoped it would be. I think a lot of people who watched Star Trek were more inspired towards the engineering stuff.
Yes.
And that's where we saw this change.
And Star Trek influenced the world, and then the world influenced Star Trek, and it moves on like that.
Yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
All right.
Excellent. I've got a couple of items of trivia, not many, so it's not too bad. Chula, which reminded me of one of the bad guys in a Bond film. I can't remember which one at the moment, but the name Chula actually came from the first few letters of Chutes and Ladders, which we would call Snakes and Ladders in the UK. So Chutes, Chew, and Ladders, La, Chula. That's where the name came from.
Okay.
That's amazing, because Chula is Spanish slang. I'm going to casually say I forgot what it means, but so that's not what I'm thinking. So when you're speaking to someone, you call her a chula, you're calling her a cute girl, or a guy is a chulo, would be a cute guy. So I thought somehow that game was brought from that somehow. Not that there was anything about that game that was cute at all. It was kind of terrifying. But that's where I thought that came. But it was actually from Chutes and Ladders.
Yeah.
That's far more appropriate and equally awesome.
See, 20 something years later, you still learn new things about that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I'm pleased with that.
What else you got, Dave?
The only other one I've got that is of any interest, really, is that was the last time we will see Lieutenant Primin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. He doesn't appear on any other episodes after this one.
No.
He was useless anyway.
He did what the military calls ETS. He was on a transport home.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
That was just a layover.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He punched the clock and he's off to work in the civilian sector, not transporting security chiefs.
Which is why he didn't care.
Right.
Mm, yeah. Totally. Exactly.
Okay, then, gentlemen, if that is everything, unless you've got anything else you want to mention about this particular episode,
Nope.
Then we shall end our review of Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 10, Move Along Home.
Right. So we do have a first-time guest.
Dust them off.
Okay. Guest, even. So let's... let me...
okay.
So they are not that dusty. We used the questions in 3 episodes ago for Monica, but yeah. Anyway, the rules are we have 7 questions for you. Don't think about it. Just give us the first answer that comes through your mind. Okay,
that's scary, man. Okay,
it's all about Star Trek.
Okay, all right, all about Star Trek.
Okay, focus.
Let's do it.
Focus. All about Star Trek. All right. Okay. Let's go.
Do it.
What's your favorite series?
TNG. So TNG is always going to be near and dear to my heart. My next door neighbor, who was also my babysitter when I was 5, 6, 7 years old, she was the one who also took me to my first Star Trek convention when I was 8 years old. Nice. We all watched The Next Generation together, and that's always going to be my favorite.
That's a lovely story.
All right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's how I came to Star Trek.
Nice.
What's your favorite movie?
Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spock reacting to punk music.
Yes. Yes. It's a popular choice.
Yes.
Well, it's a great movie. Dumbass, I mean,
Yes.
If I had written all the answers, I think that would be the one of the most favorite answers.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, when you mentioned the punk music, you're talking about the dude on the bus.
Yeah.
Right. Do you know how that music came about?
Mm-mm. What happened?
Right. So the punk on the bus, his real name is Kirk Thatcher. He was actually a creative designer for the Voyage Home. He wrote that song in the corridor on the soundstage in the space of about 25 minutes at no notice.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's one of the things I love the most about Star Trek The Voyage Home. There's like all these little stories about, you know, Shatner just bombing around San Francisco filming LA and San Francisco, just filming a film. It's like it's like a big budget student film. And like, hey, let's grab this lady who says, hey, where's the nuclear vessels? It's over there across the bay in Alameda.
Nuclear vessels.
Nuclear vessels, right. Exactly. And okay, well, that's an awesome line. She delivered it perfectly. Let's go ahead and get her into the Screen Actors Guild now so we can actually use this.
Yeah.
And it's just those little things, yeah. And like, I want to know is if they used actual whales or stunt whales, personally. I've never got a straight answer on that.
No. There'll be whales.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. And transparent aluminum? Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Sorry. Like, if I
was a child of the 80s.
Hello, computer.
Yes. Yes. Like, I was a child of the 80s. I'm still trying to exactly work out what exactly transparent aluminum was supposed to be and how they already invented it.
You'd have to figure out the dynamics of that matrix.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I do know most of the lines in that film.
Yes. Yes. No.
All excellent right, choice. Next question. What's your favorite ship?
My favorite ship's the USS Defiant.
Which one?
Oh, so the one on DS9, the NX Defiant. So the Defiant is awesome. It is the only Federation ship with a cloaking device on it. Little known fact, actually required to have a Romulan officer in the engine room operating the cloaking device. I don't know how I know that. But that was just it's the Deep Space Nine technical manual. I got that and also the TNG technical manual. And it showed in the engine room a warp core with a Romulan for scale. And it talked about the cloaking device that needed to have a Romulan operator.
Awesome. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I like the Defiant too.
Yeah.
It's a medium-sized ship.
Yeah,
it's fast.
It's a little Corvette. It's scrappy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of character in that ship, even though it didn't have a lot going on. It had no kind of like a, you know, whereas, you know, the Enterprise had that big capital ship, you know, the kind of carrier or the destroyer feel. The Defiant always had one of those like little, like a submarine feel to it, whenever they were on the bridge of that ship, they were always like running silent and being sneaky, and all that was very cool to me.
And Dave, you will discover the USS Defiant later on. I think it's season mid series
three. Something like that. I think I've just been looking it up I was just looking up all the other Defiants. I think I've seen most of the others so far.
Yeah.
Next question: what's your favorite best captain? Favorite slash best captain?
John Harrington. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, do you know what? I was going to applaud you then.
I like Harrington because it was Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day
Absolutely.
Off. You still clapping, Dave?
Totally.
Yeah.
He was in Speed as well. I love Alan Rock. He's a brilliant actor.
Yeah. My favorite captain for novelty, Hikaru Sulu. My favorite captain to watch on a weekly basis is Picard all day long.
Okay. A popular choice too.
Yeah. He's one of the big four.
What's your favorite or best character?
My favorite character is Riker. You know, I don't know why. I can't really pin it down. And he was always the action packed. And I say Riker because I would be probably skewered by the internet for saying Wesley Crusher, because I was the same age when TNG came out. So with Wesley Crusher in The Next Generation, he was the kind of the hook for the younger fans to kind of give someone to relate to on the Enterprise. And if I didn't go for that hook, line, and sinker, as I got older, my favorite character became Riker, just because he always represented someone who was steadfastly loyal. You know, he was very loyal to the Enterprise, even skipping over that sweet, sweet center chair paycheck, or whatever it's called, to stay with the Enterprise. And I thought that was always a little cooler. Yeah. Because he was the one who always got to beam away and kick alien ass, so to speak. Even though that may end up on the
Sometimes literally.
Before. Yeah.
What's your favorite storyline? So that could be an arc, an episode, or a film segment.
Ooh. Anything with the Borg in it. Honestly, the Borg always represented that huge kind of insurmountable enemy, and the good guys always took it to him and figured out some way to get around it. And with TNG, they really, you know, with Hugh, they found a way to really extract every ounce of good storytelling out of that kind of enemy from start to finish.
Yeah, agreed. And finally, what's your favorite or best villain?
Q.
My
favorite one.
Yeah.
Q. Yeah. Dave, if you ever get a chance, I don't know if you ever had a chance to listen to it, Spock versus Q. See if you can find it somewhere. Spock versus Q and Spock versus Q2. Some of the
I
most.
I don't know about that. What's that?
So Spock versus Q was a kind of like a radio show. It was, I first had it on cassette tape, and it was Spock engaging Q in a debate for the fate of the galaxy. Oh, amazing. Fate of the universe, rather. And
all right, okay.
Amazing. Is it a book too? Cause it was originally as far as I remember, it was originally a radio play for.
I think I've just found the video on YouTube, which I don't want to play.
Mm.
Okay. I don't want the advert either.
I'll see if I can find it somewhere to publish, and I'll share it with you, Dave. Because if you enjoy Q and you enjoy Spock as a character, those two butting heads, it's amazing. Also, John DeLancey brings the hilarity off of, you know, he plays very funny off of Leonard Nimoy. It's great.
Okay. Right. Well, that was our seven questions that we're going to put back in the vault of questions. And the answers will go to the vault of unpublished answers, because I kind of forgot for the past 60 episodes to write them on the website. One day I'm going to go over all the the episodes where we had the first time guests. I'm going to write that that page.
But, how did I compare to my wife? Am I going to have some splaining to do once I get off this screen share?
We will leave that to both of you.
Fair enough.
I don't want to get in the middle of that.
That is what they call a veteran maneuver, sir.
Yeah.
Call it the Yannick maneuver. Nope.
Yeah.
That's a big no.
No. I'm not going. I'm not getting in the middle of that.
Solid.
Right. I guess that ends our seven questions. And I think, unless Dave, you have something to add to this segment, then it's time for us to move to our housekeeping.
So thanks to everybody for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by transporting your best friends into a three-dimensional board game of your choice and then making them run around various perilous rooms searching for all the letters of our web address, which have been cunningly placed in a totally random order, rendering this idea completely useless. So instead, you can simply share the address of our website on social media.
I like this. Our website is at trgreyhut.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and not the answers of to the seven questions. And you can leave a comment for every episode in the little forms behind the show notes.
They're there somewhere.
Yeah, they're there.
And you can also go back to the 1970s and send us an email. Our address is feedback@tlgreyhot.org. We love hearing from you. We do read every piece of email we receive, and we may well read your email out on the show. If you'd rather we didn't associate you with your comments, then let us know and we will not read out your name.
We are also on Twitter and Facebook, thanks to Lainey for managing that. Our username for both of those is TEGHpodcast, and we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGHpodcast, which is the only place you will get the link to our unlisted live stream, which is not that unlisted now that we're streaming to Twitch.
And thanks as always to Memory Alpha. We've copied our review of this week's episode from their work, and that is released under a Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of the show is released under a Creative Commons by attribution share-alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is a part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out the website for more of our phenomenally excellent and well-produced shows over at otherside.network.
Our next episode will be a review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1 Episode 11, The Nagus. And that brings us to the end of this recording. Thank you, John, for joining us tonight.
Thanks, guys.
It was really nice to have you on the show.
Hey, it was great being here. This was so much fun, guys. Thank you, dear.
So now that you have been a guest once, you are invited to join us again when we do our Deep Space Nine extravaganza. Deep Space Nine Season 1 extravaganza in, 11 something weeks?
Yeah, something like that.
I think awesome.
11, 12 weeks, something like that. And you know, anytime if you have an episode that you want to review with us, just send us a notification, you know, to Telegram or whatever. Tell Monica, she will tell me. and you are welcome back on the show.
Hey, this was so much fun, guys. If you ever want some ill-timed one-liners, give me a call. I'll show up anytime.
No problem. Thank you, Dave, for joining us, joining the show once again.
I don't have a choice. It's in my contract.
Yeah, well, you do have a choice, but thank you for joining anyway.
No, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Yes, and we will be back next week with a whole bunch more Star Trek. In the meantime, stay safe, get your vaccines, wash your hands, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
So then, in the teaser, it is an important day aboard Space Date 9. Wow. Right, let's try this again.
Okay, game face.
Take two.
Stop it. You shut up on it all. Right. Odo finds a room with an unusual energy. That's what I meant.
Elmer Rain, count to four. Elmer Rain, then three more. Elmer Rain, if you can see. Elmer Rain, you'll come with me.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.
Comment aussi scare.
Sorry.
Having just feared for their lives. Commando Cisco.
I'm sorry. Commando. I'm trying to keep it together.
Yeah. Having just. Cisco is wearing no underpants.
I knew it all along. I suspected anyway.